Welcome to the podcast. Edit that out. Welcome to the podcast. How you doing, Jimmy?
Doing fantastic, Mel. How are you?
I'm excellent, sir. Back here with Big Jimmy Kennedy. It's been a crazy week, huh?
Yeah, man. You know, but we started out well. You officially named me your EP, executive producer. Exactly. So glad to be part of the team. And yesterday was Cerebral Palsy Awareness Day, you know, so it's a good thing that I've been able to use this as a platform to advocate for people with disabilities, especially cerebral palsy. And it's a good thing to be involved with this, man.
Good for you, brother. You're going to inspire a lot of people, man. You know, you got a lot of talent and a lot of skill, you know, and it's wonderful to see people use the most of their skills and go for their dreams. That's how it should be for everybody. You know, my aunt had cerebral palsy. My aunt Judy, she was like a great aunt, you know, through sort of marriage, and just a wonderful person, you know, who lit up every room she was in. And you know, I'm happy to see things like Cerebral Palsy Awareness Day and to see people like yourself, you know, go into the fields that they choose to go into and excel in them, you know, because that's what it's all about. You know, as I said, you know, to you before, like America, what makes it great is everybody getting the opportunity to do what they want to do, you know, and to like realize their dreams and to use their skills. You know, the problem, I think, with a lot of the, you know, xenophobia and a lot of this anti-immigrant stuff is that, you know, we're denying people an opportunity to be them their best selves. You know, when you demonize a people that are just trying to come into this country so their kids can get, you know, maybe a better education than they could get at home, or maybe have a, you know, a safer environment to grow up in, that's so they can be who they're supposed to be. You know, those parents want to provide those children with a life that they're in danger, you know, back home of having, you know. And how can you deny that? You know, America should be like, we stand for that. You know, that's what we're supposed to be in the world. You know, we're supposed to be a sort of a beacon of hope and a place you can come and reinvent yourself and work hard and strive and, you know, pass dreams on to the next generation. That's what makes this country great. And, you know, we've lost sight of that. The last political party was all about, you know, make America great again, which means make it the 50s again, you know?
Exactly.
Right. You saw him down on the border wall, you know, doing a photo op, you know, Ted Cruz, you know, in his flak jacket, Lindsey Graham. I called it Apocalypse Chow.
Yeah. Full Metal Jackasses for me, man. Just cosplay, trying to, you know, keep their constituents happy with the camo. You know, these folks watch Duck Dynasty. It all looks the same to them, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're in the bass boat patrolling the border. You know, and it's like I heard that actual part of the Rio Grande they were on is like where people water ski and everything. You know, it's like a vacation area. It's not even like some dangerous, you know, border. And, you know, it's insane. They're just trying to gin up racism and xenophobia and this anti-immigrant fervor, you know, creating something that doesn't exist. Like there's no crisis now any more than there's been a crisis for the last 10 or 15 years, you know, and that's a crisis because, you know, these people are fleeing countries that we screwed with forever. You know, we're the ones who, you know, like it forced our imperialism on Central America when I was a kid in the 80s, you know. And, you know, we're paying the price for that now. We were more than happy to like prop up dictatorships when it served our interests, you know, but the fallout from that is these countries get taken over by gangs and, you know, crooked politicians, and then people don't get a fair shake at life. And now we're demonizing them. It's just, it's disgusting.
One senator, I saw this quote. It was, you know, he was addressing the press, with that. And, he was saying, meth used to be homegrown, you know, like that's like it's a good thing that meth is being grown at all. You know, like we don't want the cartels meth. We want domestic meth. You know, that. No.
He said, you know, our meth was only 30% pure. Now it's coming in like 90% pure. Yeah. What, exactly. Like, exactly. He's advocating for homegrown meth, you know. But, I mean, you know, well, continue.
Well, and also Senator Mike Braun from Indiana is also down there. And as far as domestic news for the state of Indiana and Indianapolis, who's hosting the entire March Madness tournament, our governor just announced that the mask mandate is going to be lifted on April 6th. So, you know, with all the people traveling in to the various games in town, I would expect our numbers to just skyrocket with the amount of people that aren't usually here. You know, it's a poor decision from government standards.
Man, that's horrible. It's going to start skyrocketing everywhere again, I'm afraid. You know, those spring break images down in Miami, like, that was terrifying. You know, Eastern Ontario, it's a different country, but it's North America. You know, like, they're suffering, you know, they're getting to shut down again. Parts of Ontario are shutting down. Like, we're not over this thing. And I was in New York City most of this week, and, you know, most everybody wears masks in New York City, but, you know, you can see, like, people, you know, breathing a sigh of relief for the vaccines being available and everybody's getting vaccinated. And that is a good thing. But, like, Thursday night, it was nice out, you know, and I was on the Upper West Side, and, like, every restaurant was packed. You know, it was just like, I couldn't even walk down the sidewalk because so many people were waiting around for tables, and they're in these big groups, you know, and they're dining, like, with no masks. And the funny thing is, like, in New York, because they outlawed, you know, indoor dining, that they, all these restaurants built these, like, shelters outside, which are basically inside outside, you know, it's an even smaller environment with no ventilation. Like, you're in a you know, a thing that's framed by two by fours and, like, hard plastic shells, and you're sitting right across from somebody, you know? So, you know, I'm afraid it's gonna rise again everywhere. You know, it won't be the same things, you know, we saw earlier this year, but, you know, we're certainly not out of this thing, and we shouldn't be letting the foot off the gas in terms of, you know, trying to flatten the curve and be wise about it.
Yeah. I mean, the town that I'm living in, several folks are walking inside. One, I was at the gym earlier, and one guy didn't have a mask. You know, we're a year into this thing. We shouldn't have to remind people that a mask is encouraged, you know, in order to at least demonstrate to your fellow American that you care about them and you don't want them to get sick. But, you know, virus fatigue is a real thing. And thankfully, Joe Biden has made the United States the leading country when it comes to vaccinations. But God, imagine if 45 ended up staying in office, where we would be as far as the development of the vaccine.
Yeah. We'd all be dead, Jimmy.
Yeah, man. That's, you know, the thing that's really scares me, what would have stopped Trump from sending the military out and, you know, excavating all the people that he doesn't want in the country? Nothing. or, you know, trying to institute, like, people with disabilities for me? What would have stopped him from establishing, like, a merit test for people with disabilities in order to vote? You know, and you have to get a certain percentage of the answers right. Like, that's where I felt like we were headed.
Yeah, well, your instincts were correct. I mean, he's very much not just an ableist. He's an anti-disabilities guy. He always has been. You know, I've told you before what he called Marley Matlin, you know, when we were doing The Celebrity Apprentice. And he also, and I told you the story about in his building, how he didn't want to have blind people living in his building. You know, he got in an elevator one day and was like, what are these bumps right here? You know, and the person, you know, the construction guy was like, oh, those are, you know, those are Braille. And he's like, blind people aren't going to be living here. Get them off of there. You know, so, yeah, I mean, we were close to that. You know, he's kind of a Nazi, you know, and, like, if you don't think Stephen Miller would have, like, started, like, internment camps and, like, would have been housing these immigrants and making them disappear, they basically did that already. I mean, we lost all these children and stuff, and there's obviously women missing, and there's all kinds of, like, things that we're just now kind of dealing with. But if he had gotten reelected and with those draconian policies, like, it would have been all over. Because if he got reelected, we wouldn't have been a democracy anymore. You know, he would have just handed off power to made it Queen Ivanka or something in a few years. And all those little minions, those evil, like, dudes that propped him up, your Jason Millers and your Stephen Millers and all these psychopaths, they would have been just doing horrific things. And it's scary to think how close we got to that as a country. And it's also scary to think how many people would have cheered that on. You know, how many Americans still are cheering him on? You know, he won 74 million votes. 74 million people, you know, in November were like, yeah, I want some more of that. You know, I want some more. That was so good. Give me some more. Sign me right up. Because he says one thing over and over, you know, you're great. You know, the immigrants are bad. The black people are bad. You know, you can be like me. You're going to be a billionaire. We're the greatest people. You know, remember at his rallies, he would always be like, you're not the, you know, you're the elites. You're the elites. You know, these guys sitting there like drinking Mountain Dew, like standing in line for 6 hours to see a 74-year-old guy wearing diapers, you know, with Adderall stuffed up his nostrils, you know, yelling at him, hating being there, you know, like, yeah, he liked the cheers and stuff, but he would never set foot in like Indiana. No offense to you, you know,
yeah.
Like, he hates those kind of places. You know, he's an East Coast guy. He doesn't even go to LA. You know, he's like, he wants to be in Palm Beach and he wants to be in Manhattan, you know, the richest kind of locales in terms of what he views as, you know, snooty, important society. So like the fact that he conned all these idiots for so long and that he still does, you know, he still has such a power over these people. They still have their yards full of his signs. I mean, I saw a video on Twitter this morning that was just insane. You know, somebody had like 50 like Trump signs in their front yard on Long Island, you know, and I see the cars every day. I drive into the city. I see these pickup trucks with Trump bumper stickers. Like, man, if I was, say I was into this guy or whatever, you know, after January 6th, if I had a Trump bumper sticker, that thing would have been coming off at night. Like that, the evening, I would have snuck out of my house in the dark and taken that freaking thing off of my pickup truck so quick. But they're flying them. They fly those stupid little flags with the don't tread on me, you know, which was once a Navy flag, but now it's been sort of co-opted by these, you know, zealots. It's insane.
Well, and two, you know, one thing that killed me about Ted Cruz at the border in the military boat with, you know, pretending like he's some kind of military hero. He grew up and went to private school, you know, like all of these folks that carry around guns and are encouraging the idea of open carry. That honestly makes you look weak when you do that. You know, why do you have to be packing heat going into Starbucks? You know, all of these people are just they've been force fed all of this for so long that it's honestly created an alternative reality. You know?
Absolutely. And it's so disingenuous, yeah. You know, somebody like Ted Cruz pretending like he's a good old boy, you know, when he fried the bacon on his, you know, on his AK-47 or whatever, AR-15, you know, he went to Harvard Law School, you know,
yeah, right.
Who's the guy, you know, from Missouri?
Oh, Josh Hawley.
Josh Hawley, right? The guy, yeah. No, the guy went to Stanford. He went to Yale, I believe, and then he taught at St. Paul's, which is a prep school in London, which is about as exclusive as it gets, you know, and that guy's made his whole career about like sticking it to the establishment. You know, the dude doesn't even live in Missouri. You know, he registered like he used his sister's address in the Ozarks where there isn't even like a house. It's just like a lot or something. You know, the guy doesn't own a property. He doesn't have a pillow in the state of Missouri, but he's pretending like he's a good old boy. You know, I saw a video yesterday of this guy, Dan Rodimer, right?
Yeah.
And he ran for Congress, I believe, in Utah and lost. But like when he was in Utah, he, you know, he did a video and he's sitting there with his kids. Maybe he was a Mormon or something because he had like 15 kids around him and his wife, you know, and he did this video and he was like really soft spoken, almost like effete sounding, you know, he was like, hi, my name's Dan. And, you know, I'm a good family man. And if you vote for me, right. So now he's moved to Texas and he's running in Texas. Right. So yesterday he released a video that he's a bull rider. And the video was him sitting in a gate on a bull, right? And then the copy was like him, you know, in the leather vest and all this stuff, walking across a bull rink or whatever it's called. And he's like, hi, I'm Big Dan Rodimer. I do the most dangerous job in the world. I'm a bull rider. Like completely affected, put on, like, you know, it was insane. You know, but that's, they see that it works. You know, they're all playing roles. It's like you said, it's cosplay. You know, it's like, hey, these dumbasses are buying anything we sell them. So let's pretend like, you know, we're a bull rider. You know, when last last election cycle, you were a Mormon, you know, in another state. And they buy it. They don't see reality. You know, they don't see reality. You know who Larry McMurtry was? He was a writer. He passed away yesterday.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
He wrote Lonesome Dove, you know, which was a great, you know, almost the great American novel. And it was this epic tale. They made a great movie about it. You should see it if you haven't. I mean, it's one of the greatest things ever, a miniseries. He basically wrote this sweeping epic Western because he was sick of all this BS Western stuff. You know, he grew up in Texas on a ranch, you know, and he saw like all this kind of like Louis L'Amour, like this fictionalized cowboy, like BS that they were selling. And then he wrote books about the reality of it, you know, like what it was really like, you know, like the brutality and the, like, you know, racism and things like, you know, things that you didn't get in this John Wayne kind of BS, you know, like there's always a harsh reality to life that a lot of people who sort of sell caricatures don't want to like admit. And that kind of fiction is in politics now, you know, and Reagan started that. Reagan was the king of like pretend, you know, the guy was a Hollywood actor, you know, he was as soft as they get, you know, but he would like, you know, they would have like pictures of him baling hay on his ranch, you know, on his break, you know, and it was just like, come on, dude.
Well, and there's a reason, even Barack Obama, you know, there's a reason why he wears the blue shirt with the sleeves pulled up. It's to make these politicians appear as if they're the common man. But we've seen time and time again, the GOP is the entertainment wing of American politics. You had Kelly McEnany getting her job at Fox News after leaving as the press secretary. That's ultimately what the goal is for most of the GOP, in my opinion. If they don't remain in power, give me some kind of entertainment platform so I can continue to push the rhetoric that, you know, has gotten us to this point.
Absolutely. Really. Well, that's where the money is. I mean, Larry Kudlow, that guy, you know, that guy doesn't know anything about economics. You know, he doesn't have an economics degree. You know, he was my neighbor in New York City for like 16 years. He lived in the building right next to me. The guy is like a freak, you know, who was like, had gotten his life back together and was sort of walking the straight and narrow, and then took a job for Trump and clearly is like drunk again and using drugs because that guy's out of his mind, you know, but he's a con man. He was out there like a used car salesman, you know, slurring his words on Sunday morning talk shows, like giving these optimistic economic, you know, we should cut the taxes. Like that's what he was saying in the middle of summer when nobody worked in 6 months. You know, this guy's a charlatan. You know, he was a drug addict and a drunk, you know, who got sober for a while and isn't anymore. And that's his business. But I've known him both ways. You know, he used to smoke crack on my block, like before he got sober, like literally, you know. So he basically like said a bunch of lies for Trump for 4 years. He knows Trump's a con man, but he wanted a piece of it. Went down there, did it. Now, the day like after Trump left office, the guy's back on Fox News with a show, you know, or Fox Business or whatever. It's just, it's all a scam. And that's why Trump was doing it. Trump was running for president because he wanted a network. Like he didn't think he was going to win. You know, he didn't know how good Putin was at cheating. You know, he thought he was just going to like raise his game and then start his own version of Fox News or something. He didn't know behind the scenes, you know, that Jared had been doing all this micro targeting and like that they were actually winning these people over, you know, by all this Russian disinformation that they're sending on Facebook to all these guys in Michigan and Pennsylvania and stuff that had voted for Barack Obama, but that like worked in a factory and owned a gun and stuff, you know? And they were able to find these guys, target them with Russian disinformation, and it worked. Because these guys, you know, anybody's susceptible to that. You or me could fall prey to that. Like PSYOPs is real, dude. You see it there and like, you think you stumbled upon it yourself and you read this article and then you tell your buddy and he's like, yeah, it makes sense. And it like, it gets into this cycle of self-perpetuation, you know, and it works. So that all worked on Trump's behalf. And that's why you saw, if you saw like the night he got elected, he looked shocked. Like Trump looked as scared as anybody. My buddy was in the room there with him. And it was like, he wasn't like, yeah, I just won. He was kind of like, oh shit. You know, like they're going to find everything out, because anybody who knew him was like, why would you be running for president? That'd be like a coke dealer trying to get on a plane with a suitcase full of drugs. Like, you don't want that kind of scrutiny, dude. You know, you're as shady as it gets. You know, and you've gotten away with that for 40 years in Manhattan, you know, more than that. But, you know, from the 80s on, like that dude was just as sketchy as it got. But he won, you know, and he broke the country in many ways. Biden is rebuilding it. But, you know, the kind of thing he did, like it doesn't get out now in a generation or two. You know, it takes a long time to re-educate people.
Well, I had a theory about why Trump ran for president. You just let this bounce off of you. One reason that I thought he may have run was that he wanted 24/7 security and the criminal exemption of being president. You know, when you're president, you can't be criminally charged. I mean, was that part of it, the 24/7 security?
I don't know on the security, because he had his own security and he didn't want to use the Secret Service. So when he got elected, he's like, can I just use my own guys? I don't want those Secret Service guys around, because he didn't want the scrutiny. So he brought Keith Schiller and I'm sure like Matthew Calamari and those guys were looking over him. That's why Trump tried to change the lock. You know, he tried to put a lock on the bedroom door in the White House. No other president had a lock on the door, because they got to be able to run in at 3 a.m. if you're, you know, if you have a heart attack or there's a, you know, God forbid, like a nuclear war or something. Like, people need to be able to get to you when you're president. And he wanted to put a lock on the door and they said no. And I don't know if he ever actually got the lock put in, but I do know that he didn't want to use Secret Service, and they were like, no, you got to use them. And then he bent them to his will. They basically became his gophers, you know, and I'll tell a story about that if you want, but, okay. But just to your point, cause I'm not completely disagreeing with you. I do think he wanted the immunity and the power that came, you know, with being president. So.
Yeah. I mean, he's able for a guy that complained about the elections being rigged and the system's rigged, it's rigged in your favor, my man. Like, you've been able to position yourself in such a way that, you know, you still think that you've talked to folks with the Southern District of New York. I mean, we don't even know still if he'll be criminally charged at this point, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully he will. I mean, that's what a lot of people think. They're doing something. Michael Cohen's been there like 8 or 9 times, you know, interviewing. You're talking to a guy, you know, me, who's seen Trump get away with everything. So I don't have high hopes. And even if he gets charged with something, like, Trump's not going to jail. You know, that much I know. The dude, when people are like, he's going to be in an orange jumpsuit. No, he's not. You know, he'll be able to tie that stuff up for years. You know, he's 74 years old. Like, he'll be able to, you know, when you're wealthy in this country and you can afford lawyers, like, you don't go to jail right away, you know? You go to jail right away if you're an African-American woman and you knock on the governor's door when he's signing away your voting rights, you know, then you go to jail right away. And that woman is facing 5 years in jail. She's a state representative. They charged her with a felony. If you remember this summer, there was a famous image of like an anti-masker who went into the Georgia State House and started screaming in the state troopers' faces. And they just stood there stoically. And there's an image of a white man with just rage on his face and a big open mouth, 6 inches away from these troopers, you know, these state Georgia cops, you know, with their masks on. And this guy's screaming at him and they didn't lift a finger. You know, they didn't take him out of there. They didn't wince. They didn't do anything to him. But an African-American state legislator, you know, state representative gets manhandled. I mean, I don't know if you saw the video of her getting arrested, but it was disgusting. They were twisting her arm. The guy who's like carrying her out looks like central casting of like, give me a racist cop who looks like he's made out of bacon. You know, just like, give me like somebody made out of hate sausage. You know, he had rolls of fat on the back of his neck and no ass, you know, and was huge. He just looked like every image of like a racist cop, you know, and I don't know that he was, you know, but like, I know that I'm white and I grew up in this country and I don't have to get scared if I get pulled over. And exactly. I know that African Americans have getting pulled over by a dude who looks like that, you know, their whole lives. And I know how he behaved towards her. And it was ridiculous. Like, I would have never done that. If I was ever, I wouldn't be a cop, first of all. But like, if not that there's anything wrong, I have a lot of friends who are cops. It's just, look at me, you know. Asking me to be a cop, even though I was actually involved in a lot of security stuff in my job. And I worked with the Secret Service all the time and stuff like that. But, and I admire law enforcement, you know, when it's done right, you know, those are skilled professionals, but carrying out the governor's orders when he's signing away people's rights, you know, in front of a picture of a plantation, you know, there's a painting of a plantation where they enslaved people, you know, were exploited. Mm-hmm. for hundreds of years, you know, they're sending a message, and it's not even a dog whistle. You know, it's a straight up like, yeah, okay, we lost in January. You know, you got a black guy and a Jewish guy up there in the Senate now, but as I sign this paper, it'll never happen again. You know, and that's what that paper says, because those guys won in a roll-off, you know, a runoff election. This thing hobbled runoff elections. You know, you can't vote on Sunday. You can't vote. The polls close at 5 o'clock. You can't give people water. They're going to make it impossible. And you know what? The people will do it anyway, because they're not going to be silenced. But we have to respond to that. And this is the main thing I want to talk about this week. You know, we have to figure out a way to respond to that. I personally would never set foot in Georgia right now. You know, I wouldn't spend a dime in Georgia. And I, you know, I worked on the Super Bowl for 12 or 13 years consecutively, right? And the one I quit and didn't do was the one in Atlanta, which was like in 19, January of 19 or February of 19, because that guy stole the election from Stacey Abrams. You know, Governor Kemp threw out like 300 something thousand votes that were African-American votes, you know, and still only won by like less than 1%, by like 53,000 votes or something. But he was the Secretary of State, right? So he handed himself the governorship of Georgia, you know, a blatant stealing of an election. And I was like, I'm not going there. Like, I'm not going to spend a week in Georgia. I'm not going to walk into that stadium. I'm not going to spend my money. You know, even though it was a job I was getting paid for, like, I'm done. So you go.
You mentioned earlier that, you know, these Trump folks aren't willing to give up the idea of him being president. They still won't give up the idea of the Confederate flag. And that was the Civil War, brother. They still have that flying in certain parts of Georgia if you go searching for it. And it's just it's totally ridiculous. When you talk about the state representative being arrested in Georgia, compare that to the insurrection. You know, a white guy is able to go into the Speaker of the House's office and put his feet on the desk and nothing happens, you know, and he steals a piece of mail. Now, with that, he faces criminality and time in prison. But talk about white privilege, man. I mean, do you need any other example than this week, what we saw?
Absolutely. And that guy you mentioned, I think he's from like Alabama or something. And
oh, yeah.
Wherever he's from, right? Like he also had like an electric cattle prod with him that day, right? So when he got in, he made it home. Like he walked out of the Capitol, was giving interviews on like YouTube and stuff. You know, he wasn't like hiding what he'd done. He stole letters and things from Speaker Pelosi's desk. But when he got word that he was gonna get arrested, he got a call from the sheriff in like whatever town he was in, and I think it was Alabama. But wherever he's from, you know, they all kind of run together, don't they? You know, Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, it's all, you know, Georgia. It's the same kind of thing, you know, and I love people in a lot of those states or most of those places. Like I've toured all over those places. So I'm not completely trying to diss you, just a little bit if you're from there. But I'll tell stories about that. You know, when you do a show in Mississippi, they surround the venue with cops. It's the most hard ass kind of backwards thing. Like, you know, like you have to hide on your tour bus because you're afraid that these like cops are going to bust you for having weed or something. We'd literally have our crew like hiding and warn everybody, like, watch out. These dudes are here to like bust heads. Like it was bizarre because it was, you know, Crosby, Stills and Nash or Jackson Brown, you know, these liberal hippies coming to town, you know, they kept an eye on us. But, so that guy, when he was about to get arrested, the guy who broke into Pelosi's office, the sheriff called him up like on a Saturday and was like, hey, there's a warrant for your arrest. I'm going to come and get you, you know? And he goes, well, can you do it tomorrow? And then the sheriff was like, sure, I'll come. Or, no, I'll turn myself in tomorrow is what the guy said. And the sheriff's like, sure, okay. So they let the guy turn himself in. Then he goes and turns himself in and they're asking him about his weapons. He goes, I'm not an idiot. I got rid of everything in the house that would have been evidence. So they gave him a day to get rid of the cattle prod or whatever could have been used against him. You know, like that's how it is. It's, you know, it's like you saw with these kids who get arrested. You know, we had another shooting since the last time we're on in Boulder, you know, and the guy's like gets walked out, you know. I mean, it was, I guess, a Middle Eastern guy in Boulder, but like, you know, we go back to Georgia again, Georgia, you know, a week and a half ago with all the anti-Asian things and the cop is covering for the shooter. Like, well, he just had a bad day. I don't think it's racially motivated. Really? There's like 3% Asians in Georgia, you know, in Atlanta. Right. So he just happened to kill 8 people and they all happen to be Asian women. Right. in run businesses, you know?
Yeah, let's call it what it is. And, you know, for progressives, Democrats, liberals out there, we got to face something head on when it comes to the GOP at this point. They don't care about rules. We think that the rules exist. They do not care about the rules. And if the rules don't tend to favor them, they're going to pass laws so that they do favor them. That's what we saw this week in Georgia. You know, we are becoming increasingly more of a fascist country by the day.
Absolutely.
And we have to be aware of it.
Absolutely. Know? Well, we're not out of the woods. I mean, we got a chance to like escape, you know, this, you know, we slipped the noose. Let's just put it that way. You know, we sort of slipped the noose for a little bit, but we have to figure out what our next move is. And, you know, and Georgia is a great example. Like, we have to talk to Stacey Abrams. We have to talk to the people on the ground, you know, the activists down there, you know, the African-American women who delivered us that last victory, and men, you know, we have to ask them what they want from us, but we have to take action. You know, I said on Twitter, like, I'm not, you know, in this conversation, I'm not going to spend any money there. Doesn't mean I'm calling for a boycott. I want you to tell me what we should do, but you better do something quick, because you're not just going to like, all right, we'll just get out the vote in 2 years, because it ain't going to work that way. You can't just show up and hand people water bottles. You know, the malfeasance, like you said, they're not playing fair, and we can't wait around. And I think you have to put pressure on the big companies. You know, Atlanta's a hub of corporate, you know, interests. You got Coca-Cola, which was a racist company in the beginning. Coca-Cola didn't market to African-Americans, you know, when they were founded. That's why Pepsi came about, because Pepsi started marketing to the Black communities. Coca-Cola wouldn't deliver to Black communities. They literally would not sell the stuff to Black people. It was seen as a middle class, white middle class, and upper middle class beverage. So Pepsi came along and like changed that. So Coke is also the biggest polluter on the planet, you know? And PepsiCo and Nestle are like not even close. They're like the 2 and 3 polluters, but plastic Coke bottles are like, you know, are responsible for like most of the pollution, most of the plastics in the ocean. You know, there's a thing bigger than Texas floating around in the ocean that's basically Coke bottles and single-use plastics, you know. So Coca-Cola hasn't done anything really good for the world. You know, the product they sell gives you diabetes, it gives you hypertension, you know, it makes your teeth fall out. It's sugar water, you know, it's poison. You know, I know people drink it and it's part of life, but it ain't good for you. Right. So it's not good for you. It's not good for the planet, but you've made a fortune off of it anyway. Right. So now's your time to step up. You know, you have the franchise in McDonald's, right? Coke exclusively, you know, is sold in McDonald's, right? So you got to do something. You got to put some pressure. You got to have people say, we're not buying Coke, you know, and that's happening. People on Twitter are like, boycott Coke. That's how you have to do it. You have to like, you have to act now. You can't wait for 2 years. You can't wait for people like to start making videos, like get out the vote, raise money for Georgia. Like you got to hit them where it hurts. So you put so much pressure on Kemp that he has to revisit what he signed into law. He has to do something about it. You know, they're making a fortune in you know, tax, you know, or in money, because so many people are filming in Georgia now. You know, it's like the capital, like more shows are filmed in Georgia than in LA. So, you know, hit them where it hurts, you know, take action, because you don't have time to waste. You know, you can't, because look, it's been what, like Biden took office at the end of January, right? We're in the middle of March. It's like 6 weeks, right? 6.5 weeks, you know, 7 weeks. And look what's happened. You know, look how hard they're punching back, you know? So we have to do the same thing. You know, we're not doing photo ops down at the Rio Grande, but they've manufactured this crisis, right? Which is sucking up all the airwaves, and the liberal media, you know, eats it up. You know, every talk show last week was about the border crisis. There's no freaking border crisis, you know, any more than there has been. You know, there's not a stupid wall going up. You know, we're dealing with the waste and fallout of 4 years of idiocy, so Trump could get money on the back end from construction workers. You know, in January, he was racing to get sections of the wall built before, like, you know, he left office. So in like Coronado National Forest and all these places, like these beautiful forests, there's now images of a wall, like just 75 feet of a wall, like nothing else on either side of it. Just a random chunk of wall in the middle of a huge open desert, you know, where nobody crossed anyway, but he was rushing to get that stuff done before he left, like a wall that'll, you know, an incomplete just section of border wall, you know, spending that money while people were dying, while people hadn't worked in a year, you know, where 500,000 Americans over had perished. And this guy's worrying about these little ego chunks of wall to the last second, running out the clock. You know, he was getting some money on that, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, he was getting kickbacks from those construction companies. So he had to make sure they built until the 11th hour.
Well, and the other thing, too, that the GOP has been complaining about is that Joe Biden didn't hold a press conference. Well, he held a press conference, and there wasn't a single question about the economy, about COVID, the real stuff that's affecting average Americans day to day. You know, they just tried to create a soundbite that they could use for, you know, their 24-hour news cycle. You know, part of the problem is that people are intertwined in their own cocoon of information. You know, if the 24-hour news cycle went away, MSNBC, Fox News, CNN, and we just had an hour a day of news, we would be more united, you know, because then you can't perpetuate that over and over and over, and it just gets ingrained into your head. That's part of the divisiveness we see in our country right now.
Yeah, well, that's a good point, man. You know, and when I was growing up, like there was just the nightly news. You basically, you know, CNN was around, but like you just watch the nightly news. That's where people got their news, and everybody got the same news, and it was vetted, you know. Mm-hmm. And now it's not news. It's, you know, clicks, you know, it's designed to like aggravate you. And, you know, Fox News is taking it to an extreme, you know, but, you know, you're right. And that press conference was not the finest hour. You know, I know some of those guys that cover the White House, and, you know, I've known people have done it in the past, and it's a tough job, but they did not rise to the occasion. And I think that's, you know, I think everybody admits that they definitely dropped the ball. And, you know, some of the questions were just inane and stupid, you know, and I do think Biden should have called on the Peter douchebag or whatever his name is, you know, just to not give him the satisfaction, you know, because Joe could have eaten his lunch, you know, but, and it, you know, and the guy was complaining for two days because his mom probably spent 4 hours combing his hair just right before the press conference, you know, and he didn't get to read from his binder, you know, but you can't play into it. You know, you gotta go at him, you know.
Well, isn't his dad on Fox and Friends? I mean,
that's, his dad is.
Yeah, I believe so. The guy with like the straightened hair, I can't think of his Ducey. Is that seriously his name?
Ducey. His name is Ducey. Like drop.
Okay. Yeah, I believe his dad is a co-host on Fox and Friends. You know, and the media is a small group of people, and that you do have to have certain qualifications, and you can skip certain steps depending on who your parent is or who you know. But yeah, I believe that his dad is on Fox and Friends. So, but yeah, it's pathetic that we've become this divided, and folks are just willing to stay on Fox News because that makes them comfortable. I got news for you, folks. News isn't supposed to make you feel comfortable. It's supposed to be news and be facts, even if you don't like it, you know?
It's not, you know, Fox News obviously isn't news. And I know people who work there who are genuine reporters, you know, that came over from the local affiliate and ended up at the network level, you know, mm-hmm. that are miserable because it is all just this, you know, Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson, you know, another elitist, you know, another guy who's acting like he's, you know, a man of the people. Like now he's got a new show. I guess he's going to go out like hunting and stuff like that. It's like the dude is a Stouffer's heir. You know, like his stepmom owned Stouffer's, you know, like the fast food, you know, the whatever, you know, the frozen dinners, Hungry Man. But, you know, it's so cynical because all those guys, you know, I saw a clip of like Sean Hannity going after Seth Meyers, you know, like Seth Meyers, you scumbag, blah, blah, blah. Like Fox News is across the street from Rockefeller Center. You know, I don't think people in the rest of the country realize how small media is in New York, you know, and obviously now people are kind of broadcasting from home still a bit, but you know, in normal times, like they're across the street from each other. It's literally a diagonal to Fox, you know, Fox headquarters, you know, Fox Corp building, you know, where the New York Post is published and where Fox News, it's right across the street, you know, it's across the street from Simon and Schuster. Like, all media is controlled at a corporate level in a very small, you know, demographic. And the Trump story was like a local story. You know, I live on the Upper East Side. Like, as I said, Kudlow was my neighbor. You know, Trump lived down the street. Jeffrey Epstein lived down the street. You know, all this stuff was like a very local oriented thing, you know, and that's where the cynicism comes in, because, you know, Sean Hannity isn't a man of the people. You know, Tucker Carlson isn't a man of the people. Maria Bartiromo, you know, all these people are making a ton of money, living lives that the average folks will never get close to. You know, Hannity owns like 900 homes, literally. You know, he's a landlord. Yeah, he's a landlord. So he owns like 900 like rental units or something like that. You know, these guys are building empires on hate. You know, that's what it is. It's just, you know, it's a grift. It's a giant grift, you know, and Trump was the king of that. And he laid out a recipe for it, you know, and that's what you see these other guys following, you know, DeSantis, you know, openly, like basically selling the vaccine to his donors, Matt Gaetz, you know, trying to make the most outrageous statements he can, you know,
Lauren Boebert among them, you know, she had the audacity on TV and thanked the cop for, you know, sacrificing himself in the grocery store situation, the shooting that happened this week. And it's like, you know what would have prevented a cop from having to put himself in harm's way? If there was common sense gun laws and we wouldn't have to depend on a white guy not having a bad day, you know, like that's cause and effect. Can we understand that, please? Like, that's what we need to start to understand. What is the cause of this? And then let's move toward a solution. Ah, it's unreal, man. It's unreal. Yeah,
it's disingenuous, too, because it's like, you know, in my lifetime, you know, when I was a kid, John Lennon was shot, right? So John Lennon got shot in 1980, and like 1981, Reagan got shot. Back then, it was about outlawing handguns. You know, we were trying to control these handguns because we're like, hey, if people can carry a gun in their pocket, it's pretty easy to just murder people, you know, murder celebrities and presidents. You know, maybe we shouldn't allow people to carry, you know, easily concealable weapons. And then we ceded that. You know, we just sort of gave up on that. And then by the early 90s, it was these assault weapons, you know, or AR-15s or whatever. You know, it was these semi-automatic weapons of war. And Clinton had a ban on them. You know, Clinton had an assault weapons ban that they let expire. You know, under Bush, they let it expire. And then it just like spread like wildfire, you know. And Sandy Hook, you know, I'm 20 minutes from where Sandy Hook happened. You know, it's like they sold more AR-15s in the days after Sandy Hook than they had ever before. You know, there's something in Americans that are like, I want that. You know, I need one of those. And here's the deal. Last year, in this last year, we've been in a pandemic. There was 50 million guns sold in this country. Okay. There was already 400 million guns in circulation. Okay. So that means we're going to have a half a billion guns in another year. You know, if we stay at that pace, we'll have a billion weapons in circulation in this country in 10 years. Okay. There's 382 million people, you know, so you're going to have three weapons for every person. And the thing about like, they're coming for your guns, like they're not coming for your guns. They're not going to come into your house and look under your mattress and look in your closet and look in your wife's, you know, sock drawer, wherever you're keeping all these things. And that everyone knows that, you know, guys know, like if you got a gun and you keep your mouth shut, keep your gun. You know, if your gun's really for home protection and it makes you feel safer, keep it. Nobody's coming for it. So that lie about like they're coming for your guns, that's the NRA trying to sell guns for weapon manufacturers, right? Weapons manufacturers. There's a guy, very heroic. I can't think of his name. He's in Congress and he was a veteran. He was the guy who like kicked ass on the floor on January 6th and helped save people and stuff, Iraq veteran. And he said, look, I grew up hunting, right? I grew up hunting deer and stuff. And then I went to Iraq. You know, when I went to Iraq, I didn't bring, you know, he goes, when I was hunting deer, I didn't use an assault rifle. You know, I didn't use an AR-15 when I was hunting deer. When I went to Iraq, I didn't use a deer rifle.
Right.
You know what I mean? And somebody else had a great thread this week. you know, and he broke down the sales of these things. Like, they're not good for hunting. You don't use an AR-15 for hunting deer. They're for hunting people. You know, that's what these guns are for. And that's the most popular rifle. So people are buying these things thinking like, I might have to kill a bunch of people someday. And this is the best product to do that with. That's insane.
Well, and you also had, I forget his name. He's the congressman in a wheelchair. The video of the congressman beating up the tree, you know, like, what are we doing?
With tactical gloves.
I mean, like,
his name's Madison Cawthorn.
Have you seen
his signature? He writes like a 4-year-old girl, like with the hearts, because he was homeschooled, you know. And that guy's a scumbag. I mean, that guy, you know, that guy sexually assaulted so many people in the one semester that he was in college that 150 of his classmates signed a letter saying this guy should not be in Congress. You know, imagine making that much of an impression on your classmates in your freshman semester that 150 people are like, I remember that guy. He's such a douchebag. He should never, ever be serving in Congress, because he would try to attack these women and would attack them. He'd get them in his charger, you know, his car, and he'd like, you know, try to assault them. And he got that car because he got a big payout. You know the story with his crash?
Go ahead and tell.
Yeah. He and his buddy were driving back from spring break, and they were switching seats as the car was driving down the highway. So they're like, here, you know, I'll drive for a while. And they're climbing over each other while this vehicle was in operation, right? And when it was his buddy's turn to drive, his buddy fell asleep. They were doing that so they could like make the drive in one stretch instead of like taking a break and being responsible, right? So they're switching places in a moving vehicle. His buddy falls asleep, hits a Jersey wall like a divider, you know, crashes the van, right? Catches on fire. His buddy pulls him out of there. You know, pulls Madison out of there. Another guy comes, and, you know, the guy lives, and, you know, he loses like use of his legs. It's partial too. He's not like completely paralyzed. Like, he can't, his legs don't function well, but it's not like
waist down.
Right. But I don't even think it's completely, I don't even think he's completely lost like those things, you know?
Okay.
Like, I don't know the medical terminology, sure. but hey, sure. he's obviously, you know, severely impaired. But so when he starts running for Congress, he goes to a fundraiser thing at a church, and he lies and he goes, my buddy left me for dead in the car. He left me in a burning car, and Jesus saved me. And that's how I escaped. Right. So he lies about what his buddy did. Then he sues his buddy's insurance company and gets this settlement of millions of dollars. And that's how he's buying the Dodge Charger or whatever that he's assaulting girls in, and all the fancy shotgun, you know, fancy rifles and everything that he has, you know, assault weapons, right? And all the military cosplay. And he still has a lawsuit against the insurance company. So he won already one bad faith lawsuit. Now he's got another lawsuit for $30 million against this company. And he was at fault, you know. He got paralyzed because his buddy fell asleep driving. You know, there was nobody's, you know, it was like, it wasn't the insurance company's fault. You know, it wasn't like the faulty car, you know, it was his behavior and his friend's behavior. So the fact that this kid would lie about that, lie about going to the Naval Academy, you know, the guy's got so many lies that he's already told. He's 25 years old. He's been in Congress, you know, he did one semester of college, and now he's in Congress. He doesn't write any legislation or anything. He said everyone he hired was just going to be for communications, right? So all he wants to do is make these videos, you know. And that video when he's punching the tree, he was wearing tactical gloves, meaning there's Kevlar in the knuckles. So that's why he's knocking that bark off, because he can't feel it, you know, because it's got like, it's padding, you know, it's like armor. What a horrible person, but a perfect example of where we're at as a nation. You know, that a guy like that could get elected over a decent guy. You know, he beat a real veteran for that seat. And he's gonna be almost like the face of the Republican Party. You know, he's like, they love it. They're eating that shit up because he looks like a Nazi. You know, he looks like Aryan youth. And he went to Hitler's vacation home. You know, one more thing I'll add to my rant. He literally took a trip to Germany with his winnings, you know, from suing a bad faith, you know, lawsuit. He takes a vacation and goes to Hitler's vacation home. in Austria or in Bavaria or whatever, and like poses like, yeah, I'm here at the great leaders, you know, where he partied with all his buddies in between like waging military campaigns. Like the kid's a Nazi.
Wow.
You know all that?
I didn't know about the Nazi trip. No.
He put it on Instagram. He's sitting there in his wheelchair in this hallway, like, you know, in the underpass of this thing. And he writes this glowing thing like, this is where the Führer hung out with his buddies and drank wine and stuff, you know?
Who flexes about Hitler?
Assholes.
God. I just, and this goes to show how poorly our country is educated, you know, and how important it is to institute college education for free. You want an educated society. You know, we can talk about the importance of having a degree that can lead to a well-paying job. We want wages and salaries to increase for everybody. But the concept of college is beyond the classes. It's the people you meet, the professors that you can learn from, and the experiences that you hopefully can empathize with. That's what college is about. You know, I grew up in the suburbs of Indianapolis, a very well-off town where I went to one of the best high schools in the country, where we had a planetarium, you know, like this was an expensive school. One of the reasons why I got into radio was I had a radio station at my high school. You know, you talk about Outliers, that book by
Malcolm Gladwell.
Malcolm Gladwell. One of the reasons I'm successful is I've been doing this since high school. You know, I had those reps early on. So we have to understand there is a huge disparity when it comes to opportunity and education, and we have to fix it, you know?
Well said. A nice flex on Malcolm Gladwell, man.
Oh, I love that book. And yeah. It makes a lot of sense as to why, you know, people like Bill Gates, he grew up next door to the University of Washington, which had the country's only computer lab, you know, and he was able to code at 10 years old. You know, his 10,000 hours were covered by the time he was 20.
I know. That's amazing. I grew up hanging out on University of Maryland campus. My uncle was a student there, and I would get to go to the dark room. You know, he was into photography, and I would just get to go to the student, you know, union and like use the dark room and everything, you know. And there's a lot of, you know, I went to school with a lot of kids of professors and graduate students and stuff, you know. And unfortunately, you know, we've made, you know, a higher education, like we've burdened, you know, student loans are just insane. You end up spending your whole life paying off your interest, which I've been doing. You know, I took out student loans in 1996. They still exist. You know, I still just pay the minimum every month. It's insane. And I went to drama school. You know, I went to a 2-year acting school in New York City. Like, I can't imagine these people. And I have friends that are in this boat that go to medical school and law school, you know, that have 4-year undergrad and then graduate school. You know, guys, if you owe 100 grand, 150 grand, you're never paying it off, you know, and you're also probably not going to buy a house for a long time. You're going to, like, you know, you're not going to buy that new MacBook. You're not going to do a lot of things. You're going to have roommates till you're 35 or 40. You know, it's just unfair. You know, you don't privatize, you know, government, you know, student loans, and then they took them back, but then they gave exemptions, and, you know, the whole thing is just a mess that they need to, we'll do a whole episode on that sometime, because that's just a travesty. But you know, back to Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah.
You know, one of the coolest things, Crosby, when I worked for Crosby, Stills and Nash, Crosby made up t-shirts for like some of the crew guys that he liked. I was a road manager, and I got one, and it said 10,000 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Now, guys he thought had like learned their craft, he sent out these things at the end of a tour. I still have it somewhere. It's pretty cool. But yeah, it sounds like you had a very privileged upbringing, and good for you. You know, you made the most of it, you know, and you care about other people. That's what it's all about. It's about, you know, giving opportunities to people, like we started the show. You know, it's kind of a good way to wrap it up. We started the show talking about that, you know.
Yeah.
The crisis we're in now is we're wasting human potential. You know, and wasting talent. You know, I it's like that. We all suffer when that happens. You know, I used to work on the Super Bowl, as I said. Colin Kaepernick, I saw that guy play in a Super Bowl. You know what I mean? That guy was at the top of his like game. He was a great player. And then he, you know, made a very brave and necessary political statement, which wasn't harming anybody. He just takes a knee, right? And then he gets blacklisted. You know, his career gets taken away from him. You know, and that was like years ago. So we didn't get to, how many touchdowns did that guy have in him that we didn't get to see? You know, how many thrilling Sundays and performances? You know, that guy was an NFL quarterback. That's like 1% of the 1%. Like to get that skill level and make it through all that stuff, you know, college and not get injured, you know, and have, it's like being an astronaut, you know, have the ability to learn the playbook. And there's so many factors that have to come together. Stars have to align to get to that level, you know? So to have that guy performing at that level and to take away his career, it doesn't rob just Colin Kaepernick. It robs us all of excellence, you know, and excellence inspires other kids and other people, and it makes our lives richer and better. And that's what we need to strive for as a nation. We need to wring every drop of talent out of our people, no matter what color they are, no matter where they came from or where they were born or what their parents did or what their last name is. You got something to give? We need your help. And now more than ever, because this country needs rebuilding. You know, you ever look at a fish? You ever watch a fish in the water? Mm-hmm. If you watch a fish swim in the water, like you can see a rainbow, like on their side, you know, their scales make a rainbow, right? When the sun hits it, their scales make a rainbow. So each scale has a different color in it. You know, some are purple, some are pink. You can't see it when you look at the fish, when you pull it out of the water, right? It just looks all silver and scaly, right? But each scale has a magic in it. You know, each scale has like a hue that makes a rainbow when the sunlight hits it. You know, that's how we have to look at people, our population. You know, it doesn't matter what, you know, color you are and what, you know, where you came from. There is a reason you were here. And when the sunlight hits you, you're going to shine and we're going to make a rainbow, you know, and we're going to make it a better place. And that's how it works. And anything less than that is cheating everybody.
Yeah, and to go back to your point on Colin Kaepernick, take it from a guy that was with the Indianapolis Colts for multiple seasons. The NFL stands for not for long, okay? The concept of a player playing at all, like you said, is a miracle. For Colin Kaepernick to have made a substantial living, good for him. But you tell me, what's more patriotic, kneeling during the national anthem or chanting stop the vote, you know? Exactly. Like that's the comparison we have. And we need to take a step back, look at it from the macro and say, what's really more of an issue? You know, like, let's just take a deep breath and try to mend fences as best we can, but also fight for what is rightfully our country and the original concept that if you come here, you work hard, you put some effort in, and you form bonds with people, you build a team, you have a vision for something, then maybe it can be carried out, you know? So.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll get back to that place someday, you know? Right now, like taking a breath is hyperventilating, you know?
Exactly.
The other side is just, you know, it's fomenting fear and, you know, people are just tripping over themselves to see who can do more hate, you know, and intolerance. But, you know, good has a way of winning. You know, so ultimately things will work out. Did I ever tell you the Stevie Wonder story?
I've heard it, but you can tell it again.
Oh, that's right. You heard it. Well, I'll tell it for the viewers or the listeners that haven't heard it. You know, when Barack Obama, and we'll end with this, when Barack Obama was inaugurated, we did a big concert. I worked on both of his inaugurations, but I also worked on this concert we did the Sunday, you know, before his inauguration. We had Bruce Springsteen and U2 and Stevie Wonder and, you know, all these guys were playing, you know, and there was a million people out on the audience, you know, and I actually stood on the steps, you know, when U2 was playing and President Obama was president-elect at the time, you know, was there with his family and his kids and they were all sitting behind me. And I look and Sharon Stone is sitting next to me or standing next to me.
Hey.
Yeah, right. And then I look to the right and David Axelrod is there. You know, Biden's or, you know, Barack's campaign manager. And I turned to David and I said, you know, hey, I just want to thank you for your part in all this, you know, and I want to shake your hand. And he put his hand on my shoulder and he said, turn around. And we both turned around together and we looked down the mall at these millions of people, and he pointed and he goes, I didn't do it, they did.
Right.
And it was like this West Wing moment, you know, it was like, oh my God, you know, it was so profound. So that ended and we went, you know, we all, Barack decided, you know, he wanted to, Mr. President Obama decided he wanted to like thank all the performers. So we threw together this like ad hoc kind of meet and greet thing behind the Lincoln Memorial, this tent, right? And they were like, you can go in and some of you, you know, this, my boss went in and, you know, a few of us on the talent staff got to go in this room that was otherwise like Tom Hanks and Pete Seeger, you know, like,
wow.
Yeah, Usher, you know, and like Michelle Obama spoke and I was like, man, she's even smarter than he is. Like she's even more formidable than he is. So I was like, this is great. Like she is amazing. And then he got up and gave a great speech and, you know, talked about how the arts were going to matter in his administration and everybody was invited to come play the White House and stuff. And then he was like, and I know y'all want some pictures for Facebook. So I'm about to get real busy. So now's the time, you know, and then he hopped down and he took selfies with us all. You know,
wow.
And I'm standing next to Usher, right? And I got a friend there, you know, and I'm like, all right, when he gets to me, I'm going to turn, you snap the photo, you know, like all I cared about was getting this photo, you know? So he talks to Usher and then he comes to me and he's like, hey, how you doing? You know, he sticks out his hand. I'm like, I'm really good. And I just turn to make sure I get the photo, you know? And he just kind of laughs and keeps going. Cause you know, I didn't take my moment to say anything profound. I just wanted the picture. And then I turned to Usher, I go, man, he's got the softest hands. And Usher's like, he does. Those are very he's got these soft hands, you know? And but anyway, so everybody's kind of like jostling around, you know, and I bump into Stevie Wonder and I kind of jostle him, you know, and I go, hey, sorry, Stevie. You know, I said, it's Noel, by the way, you know, we've worked together before. And I just wanted to let him know, you know, it was a friend that kind of bumped into him, you know?
Yeah.
And he takes his arm again, you know, people putting their arms around me all day, right? It's pre-Me Too. And he reaches down and like around my waist and pulls me in close. And he goes, yeah, I know, but something's different about you now. You know, when I said, this is Noel, I worked with you. He goes, something's different about you now. And I go, that's because I know what you're talking about now, Stevie. And he goes, what am I talking about? And I said, you're singing about love. And the only way to change this world is if we react to it with no fear in our hearts. We have to react to everything with love in our hearts. And that's the only way we can change anything. And he goes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. That's the only thing I've ever been talking about. And then he's like, what do you do? And I said, well, I'm a talent guy. I helped get everybody, you know, in the room. He goes, no, what do you do? I said, I'm a songwriter. You know, I've written songs my whole life. He goes, I'm a songwriter. He goes, really? Take out your phone. I'm like, what? He goes, take out your phone. And I take out my phone. He goes, take down this number. And he's like, 310, blah, blah, blah. You know, I put the number in my phone. He goes, that's my home number. I want you to call me up and I want you to send me some songs. And I'm like, oh my God. You know, at this point, my heart's beating out of my chest. I'm like, I got to get away. You know, like, this is too much. Like, I got to walk away. So I'm like, all right, Stevie, thanks. You know, and I walk away like 3 feet and he goes, hey. And I turn back around. He goes, they better be good fucking songs.
For Stevie, man. Woo.
Stevie, it's the man. And it goes on and on, you know, because then I had to work with him 4 years later when Obama got reelected. And that story continues. And I tell that story in detail in this thing I'm writing right now, but I'll tell it again on the podcast. But the point of that story is, you know, when we all come together with a common cause, you know, and without fear in our hearts, but with love and inspiration, we can change this world and make it a better place. And that's what we all need to do. That's what we're going to do in Georgia. You know, that's what we're going to do in all these instances where we have to rise to above the evil, because there's, you know, there's some bad stuff going down. There's bad winds blowing right now. But, you know, we're going to get through it together and we're going to come out victorious in the end. So I guess that's all we have to say this week, Jimmy.
Yes, sir. Amen to that, Noel. It's going to keep getting better if we have love in our hearts. So thanks. Thanks for the great stories, man.
Yeah,
Stevie, man. Stevie Wonder of all people. Wow.
Stevie's my man. I've done a lot of things with Stevie.
He's been great for, God, he's been doing it for 50 years. Is that hyperbole? How old is Stevie?
No, Stevie was a child star. He's been doing it since the 60s. Tambla. He was on Motown. He's been doing it since he was 12 years old.
Yeah. But And my dad was always a huge fan of Stevie. Could always feel, you know, dad was about finding artists that he could feel. And you can definitely feel Stevie.
Oh, if you can't feel Stevie, you ain't alive, son.
That's correct, man. It's like a defibrillator for your soul.
Now, Stevie's like I'll tell the story. Stevie's like on a different level than the rest of us, man. And the rest of my story goes there because he like freaked me out years later, just like reached into my being and took a truth from me that I was trying to hide almost. You know, Stevie's a deep dude. But anyway, that's all we got time for this week. Thanks everybody for listening and tuning in. We'll be back next week. We're going to be doing this every week. It's available everywhere you get your podcast. You already know that if you're listening now. And thank you and be safe and talk to you soon, folks. Bye-bye.